stand and move about the room outside of your wall. Just note how this feels. December 8th. In the source place. Take a pitcher full of water and set it down in the water. Now it has water inside and water outside. We mustn't give it a name, lest silly people start talking again about the body and the soul. Kabir. We can't help it. We make too much of where we end and where others begin. Yet only after declaring healthy boundaries can we discover and experience the true common water of spirit that Kabir talks about. It can be confusing. But though we're not always eloquent or clear in what comes out, everyone is clear as water in the source place where mind and heart start as one. As Teilhard de Chardin said, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Entering our days with this perspective can make a difference. It provides the ocean for our small pitcher of a life. It helps to remember that despite all our struggles for identity, despite the weight of living, there is an irrepressible ounce of spirit in each of us, a wellspring we carry within that can be blocked but not contained. It emanates through all beings as the longing for love and peace. When opening our longing, our honest want for love, we open the fountainhead of spirit, and then, like Kabir's pitcher, we are water living in water, love living in love, a small thing alive in a big thing alive, a breath inside a wind. For your meditation, sit quietly, and as you breathe, think of yourself as Kabir's small pitcher of water. Breathe deeply and freely, and think of the unseeable world of spirit around you as an ocean that carries you. Breathe slowly and cleanly, and try to feel how you and the life around you are made of the same thing. December 9th. The Work of Love. Love courses through everything. Fakhruddin Iraqi. I recently learned that the first form of pencil was a ball of lead. Having discovered that lead, if scratched, would leave markings, people then wrestled with chunks of the stuff in an attempt to write. Through the work of many, the chunks were eventually shaped into a useful form that could fit the hand. The discovery became the pencil, a tool. I'm humbled to confess after a lifetime of relationship that love is no different. Be it a lover or a friend or a family member, the discovery of closeness appears in our life like a ball of lead, something that if wrestled with will leave markings by which we can understand each other. But this is only the beginning. The work of love is to shape the stuff of relationship into a tool that fits our hands. With each hardship faced, with each illusion confronted, with each trespass looked at and owned, another piece of the chunk is whittled, and love begins to become a sacred tool. When truth is held in compassionate hands, the sharpness of love becomes clear, not hurtful. For your meditation, bring to mind a significant relationship that you're struggling with. As you center yourself, pray that the love you share continues to find its form. As you enter your day, stay pliable and open to becoming a tool. December 10th. Questions Put to the Sick. 4. When was the last time you listened to the stories of others? A Native American medicine man. I found myself in a psychodrama group that met every other week for 2 years. I didn't have any idea what psychodrama was, and would never have tried it, except the man who led the group was a sage to me. I knew he had more to teach me, and I vowed to myself to participate in whatever he was doing. It turned out that psychodrama was a process by which we each took turns bringing to life a part of our inner journey in the hope that by acting out dreams or current conflicts or unresolved pieces of our past, we might, with each other's help, unfold some wisdom that would help us live our lives. I didn't want to go first, and it was several weeks before I found the courage to take my turn. At first I thought I'd just wait on the perimeter and watch how this would all unfold, but unexpectedly and with great gravity, I began to see that each person's story, no matter how different from my own, would suddenly be about a part of me that I'd never given voice to. I discovered that taking part in another's dream or conflict or unresolved past was just a deeper way of listening, a deeper way of being present. The reward for such deep listening was the incredible honor of first witnessing a living model of human courage, and then finding comfort and healing in the surprise that our stories are really all the same. It seems the ancient medicine men understood that listening to another's story somehow gives us the strength of example to carry on, as well as showing us aspects of ourselves we can't easily see. For listening to the stories of others, not to their precautions or personal commandments, is a kind of water that breaks the fever of our isolation. If we listen closely enough, we are soothed into remembering our common name. For your meditation, breathe slowly and meditate on being open and receptive today. As you move through your day, give over your energy to listening. As you hear the stories of others, be aware of when one touches a part of your own story. If you can, offer a thread of your own story as a gift in return. December 11th. Inside Gravity. Inside gravity, the same things happen, just slower. When a plate breaks, we call it an accident. When a heart breaks, we call it sad. If it's ours, we may say tragic. When a dream breaks, we sometimes call it unfair, yet ants drop dirt and manage more, and birds drop food and peck again. But as humans, when we drop what we need, philosophies and complaints abound. It's not that we moan, but that we stop living to hear ourselves moan. Still, stars collide and histories begin. In our world, something is always letting go, and something is always hitting the earth. Often that which lets go survives by releasing, by not holding on until what needs to go is ripped from it. Often that which is hit survives by staying soft, by allowing what hits it to temporarily shape it the way stone shapes mud. As humans, we take turns letting go and being hit. Love softens this process and peace slows it down until in moments that are blessed, we seem to play catch with what we need. For your meditation, as you inhale, bring to mind what is currently hitting you and how you might soften to lessen its impact. As you exhale, bring to mind what is currently needing to move away from you and how you might open yourself to more easily release it. December 12th. The Treasure at Our Feet. It's not easy to find happiness in ourselves, and it's not possible to find it elsewhere. Agnes Repplier. If forced to name them, the biggest obstacles to peace are ourselves and the world. Often en route to the truth of my soul, I get stuck in myself or lost in the world or the reverse. Still, we carry the treasured essence within. It's always with us, very near though it may seem far, and there's no place else to find the treasure but underneath our agitation. It waits there like gold on the bottom of a shallow lake, and though we stand in the water, the treasure at our feet, this stirring of our reflection keeps us from seeing. More often than not, I need to stop moving and thinking and fixing and simply reach within myself. So run if you like, for it will all come with you. Or think and reason as many times as you must, for your heart will outlast the ripples of your thought. Or blame the things of this world if you need to, for the things you blame will eventually disappear. Then you and I will still be left with ourselves and the world and the treasure at our feet. For your meditation, center yourself, and if there's something you are running from, inhale and let it catch up with you. Sit quietly, and if there's something you are trying to reason away, exhale and let it touch you. Be still, and as you breathe, let the forces of the world touch you and move on by. Now reach if you can with your breath for the treasure waiting within. December 13th. When we speak. I have only now realized that something endless has broken ground in me, and I have no choice but to live and love until it grows me like a tree. I met an old man at a gathering, and when everyone went their way, he leaned into the hush spaced between us and talked to me as if we were trees. Scratching his chin, he said, "We start out thin and green, and each time the sky grows dark, we think we will break. But the downpour makes us grow, though never straight, always twisting for the light, and strangely, the more we reach above the earth, the deeper something in us fingers its way down. And it is this, our unseen fingers reaching for the core, that keeps us from blowing away. Now there's no more running and very little swaying. And up till now there have been many languages, though none that could be heard, just a creak at dawn, a moan at night, and sooner or later we are brought down. It doesn't matter how, I tell you, we are just undone. But stacked we burn, and here the poetry rises from us, leaving wisdom in the ash." Then he left. I wasn't sure what happened. But I think his story had to do with humility and with how all that we experience is really kindling for when we truly speak. Somehow we grow through all the things that seem so dark, and with each season, our roots thicken and deepen and spread to bear our weight of living in the world. But what is the being brought down, the being undone? Perhaps it's anything. Disappointment, loss, unexpected change that brings us humbly closer to the earth. Perhaps any upending of our very personal designs allows us to feel our bond more fully with other living things. Yet what does it mean for us to be stacked so we can burn? Perhaps this is about being simplified to the point that what has grown within us can rise out of us with a passion for being alive. Perhaps after two marriages and the coming and going of dearest of friends, I can, when stripped of my bark, utter something hot and clear about what it means to love. Perhaps after losing a rib and gaining my life, I can, when set aflame by the moment at hand, cough up some cinder of what it means to live off truth. Experience, it seems, wants to burn out of us, And whether what comes out is intelligent or pretty, the purpose of all fire is to light and warm. Perhaps as the farmer on the edge of winter must gather wood to make it to spring, we each must gather our experience and set it ablaze to keep our lifeblood healthy and warm. For your meditation, sit quietly before a fire if you can, and meditate on one key experience that has unexpectedly shaped who you are. Breathe long and softly, and let this life-changing experience that lives in you rise like a small flame. Breathe evenly, and give a simple word or two to this small flame. With your eyes closed, repeat the words that have surfaced several times, and let your own experience warm you. December 14th. Freeing ourselves. It's hard to tell the truth, but once told, it's hard to keep it back. Sharon Green. Whatever truth we feel compelled to withhold, no matter how unthinkable it is to imagine ourselves telling it, not to is a way of spiritually holding our breath. You can only do it for so long. Of course, the longer we keep our truth hidden, the more difficult it is to give it voice, or so it seems, because while the pressure is building, we are running out of air. But we are never more than a heartbeat from freeing ourselves of that awful isolation, never more than a gulp and a cough from falling back into the open. All the while, the power of being hidden keeps us from the vitality of living, and so the healing value of telling the truth is in how it returns us to the pulse of what is sacred. Just as important as the respect and trust we gain for telling the truth is the release of that terrible pressure that keeps us hidden and isolated. This is the embodied gift of truth, which, like breathing, keeps us alive. For your meditation, center yourself, and as you breathe, imagine it is your truth that you are inhaling and exhaling. During your day, take time to inhale your truth and release it back into the world. December 15th. Goya and Melville. The sun doesn't stop shining because people are blind. It's a hard challenge to stay true to ourselves in the face of indifference. Rejection and opposition are painful, but being treated as if you don't exist is quietly devastating. This soft puncture is particularly human. Eagles soar and glide for hours in canyon air, and the fact that no one knows does not lessen their ability to fly. But for us, there is a constant elusive heroism in being who we are, especially when we're misunderstood, judged, or ignored. Somehow our need for love gives tremendous power to the opinions of others, and so we're required to guard against turning our lives over to the expectations of others. A great example of hearing one's deeper self is the Spanish painter Goya. Writing about Goya, André Malraux tells us that after going deaf in 1792, the painter understood that to allow his genius to become apparent to himself, it was necessary that he should dare to give up aiming to please. It's both touching and instructive that Goya couldn't fully realize his God-given gifts until he went deaf to the demands of those around him. One of the saddest examples of being ignored is the novelist Herman Melville. Having survived many years at sea against his will, Melville had authored several best-selling sea adventures. But when he opened his soul and wrote Moby Dick, two things happened. One of the greatest novels ever written by an American was birthed, and the American public laughed at the great white whale and its maker, he was ridiculed and dismissed. This deep and sensitive man was so wounded by this that he painfully withdrew, and at the age of 32, at the height of his powers, he virtually stopped writing for nearly 40 years. Tragically, he extinguished his inner voice because those around him couldn't hear. I carry both Goya and Melville as reminders of how precious and unique each of our gifts is. No one can really know what you are called to or what you are capable of but you. Even if no one sees or understands, you are irreplaceable. For your meditation, sit with a trusted loved one and take turns describing a time you felt inwardly bound to a person or situation that no one else seemed to understand. What made you stay true to what you were feeling? How well do you know that part of yourself? December 16th. Fully knowing the road. If you come to a fork in the road, take it. Yogi Berra. Like the koans of Zen monks and the wit of Shakespeare's jesters, we may never know if the sayings of this baseball legend are utter nonsense or utter wisdom. But the longer we stay with them, the more they reveal. What this one says to me is not to stall too long at the crossroads of life, not to hesitate our way out of living. We can't experience everything, and taking one road will always preclude another. But agonizing over which to take can eventually prevent us from knowing any road. Even when taking one road, keeping the other alive in our mind for too long is the beginning of regret. In fact, giving over to regret is a way to resist our limitations, a way to still take the other road with us. It's the heart's way to be stubborn. Ultimately, keeping the other road so actively with us only keeps us from fully knowing the road we have chosen. We are beautifully limited creatures, capable of great moments of full living, but we can't have it all or experience it all. We can only, paradoxically, experience all there is by giving ourselves completely and humbly to the small path we are drawn to. For your meditation, center yourself and consider a decision you are facing. Breathe slowly and try each path on once, no more. Return to your day and try not to replay your choices. Simply let your deeper self tend to these things for you. December 17th. Healing ourselves. In this world, hate never yet dispelled hate. Only love dispels hate. This is the law, ancient and inexhaustible. Buddha. One of the most difficult things about healing from being hurt by others is how to put wounds to rest when those who have hurt us will not give air to the wound, will not admit to their part in causing the pain. I have struggled with this deeply. Time and again I find myself confusing the want for justice with the need for a witness of the wound. Physical wounds are hard to miss, but emotional wounds are seldom visible. This is why they must be looked at and acknowledged if we are ever to heal. Yet so often our pain is compounded by the very human fact that we may never agree on the nature of what happened. If we do, we may never admit it to each other. Or the amends we feel we so deserve may go with the hurtful one to the grave. As with so many other crucial negotiations of life, what's required is to honor what lives within us. We must bear witness to ourselves, for there is no power as embracing or forgiving as the authority of that portion of God that lives in each of us. For your meditation, sit quietly until you begin to feel safe, and bring into view a wound that hasn't healed. breathe steadily, and look directly at the wound, bearing witness to yourself and all you've been through. Breathe fully, and let your compassion for yourself be the air to cleanse the wound. December 18th. Lighting Our Way. One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. Carl Jung. If Jung is right, then perhaps paradise is no more than seeing the light forming in the dark. Perhaps being awake is paying attention to the ongoing moment of life that we so often take for granted. That moment, like conception, like seed cracking open, is happening even as I speak this to you. Yet as a headlight grows filmed by driving through all kinds of weather, the gift by which we perceive gets covered by experience, and our ability to see is diminished until we clean the gift. This is a lifelong process, one that never ends but always begins. So the care of one's being is imperative and continuous, as simple and hard as wiping the residue of experience from your mind and heart, letting your original face again light the way. Though like scratching the middle of your back, we often need each other to regain our sense of oneness. It helps here to tell an old Sufi story about a thirsty man who follows a muddy stream into a cave. He carries a lantern, holds it before him, and finally finds the clear source which he can drink from. When feeling muddied and troubled, we must not drink from the mud, but trace its source carefully. Carrying the lantern of our spirit before us, we must enter the darkness of our troubles if we are to drink clearly from the source. This is making the darkness conscious. And compassion is swaying your small light near others, too troubled or muddied to see their way. For your meditation, sit quietly with your eyes closed and feel the light of spirit in every cell of your body. As you inhale, feel each cell brighten. As you exhale, feel a slight increase of light around you. During your day, when feeling troubled, stop and breathe slowly and light your way. December 19th. Sugar in the Tree. As someone sitting beneath a tree can imagine the earth from above the trees, a heart encumbered by reality can know eternity. As a boy, I spent many hours at sea on a 30-foot ketch my father had built. When the sea would get rough, I'd go below where the noise and motion of the deep would pound the hull, and every toss and lurch would feel sudden and pointed. Finding me there, my father told me how sailors, when feeling seasick, have always made their way on deck to look at the horizon. While that doesn't prevent the pitch and drop of waves in a storm, it is somehow less upsetting if the larger context is kept in view. I have kept this wisdom close to me when pitched in storm. In truth, whether facing cancer, or riding the insecurity of repeated rejection, or trying to surmount the most profound moments of loneliness, my greatest pains and fears have been lessened when I've managed to keep the larger sense of life before me like a horizon. This is the difference between despair and faith, between the narrow point of doubt and a view long enough to sustain all life-giving possibility. It seems we suffer more when huddled below, and though the eternal perspective, the horizon of all time and all life, doesn't remove us from our storms, it does make things bearable. During the hardest times, keeping my eyes on the horizon has helped me endure such things as the loss of a rib and a marriage and a job I loved. For staying where we can keep God in view allows the ups and downs to be somewhat predictable. It even shows that suffering has its rhythm. Keeping the larger view can be the difference between thinking life is cruel and knowing that experience is a powerful ocean. In ways that truly matter, God is always in the horizon, and faith is making our way on deck despite our pain. For your meditation, wherever you are, in your bedroom, at your desk, or on a bus, sit quietly and see yourself sitting there from above your bed or desk, or the bus you're riding. Breathe slowly and be both where you are and above where you are. Now feel the stress or pain of what you're carrying this very instant. Breathe slowly and try to see yourself in your life and from above your life, and feel both your pain and the universe surrounding your pain. When you find yourself huddled in your pain, try to breathe your way to the horizon. December 20th. Believing. Believing is all a child does for a living. Curtis Lamkin. Picasso once said that artists are those of us who still see with the eyes of children. Somehow, as we journey into the world, more and more gets in the way, and we stop questioning things as a way to move deeper into them, and start questioning as a way to challenge things that we fear are false. As a child, I used to talk to things. Birds that flew overhead, trees that swayed slowly in the night, even stones drying in the sun. For years, though, I stopped doing this freely because of what others might think. Then I stopped altogether. Now I learn that Native Americans do this all the time, that many original peoples believe with their childlike eyes right into the center of things. Now, almost 60, I am humbled to recover the wisdom that believing is not a conclusion, but a way into the vitality that waits in everything. For your meditation, when you can, talk with a child about how they see the world. December 21st. Nowhere to go. There is nothing to do and nowhere to go. Accepting this, we can do everything and go anywhere. One of the basic notions of Taoism is that the world in all its mystery and difficulty can't be improved upon, only experienced. We are asked to believe that life in all its complexity and wonder is complete as it is, ever-changing and vital, but never perfectible. I've come to understand that this doesn't prevent our being involved. On the contrary, accepting that the world can do quite fine without us allows us to put down the burden of being corrective heroes and simply concentrate on absorbing the journey of being alive. So our work is not to eliminate or recreate anything. Rather, like human fish, we are asked to experience meaning in the life that moves through the gill that is our heart. Ultimately, we are small living things awakened in the stream, not gods who carve out rivers. We cannot eliminate hunger, but we can feed each other. We cannot eliminate loneliness, but we can hold each other. We cannot eliminate pain, but we can live a life of compassion. I only came upon these notions after experiencing them. Faced with dying, the opportunity to change the world was taken away. It was all I could do to survive being changed by the world. This sent me into a sudden depression, but soon I found what remained to be liberating. Stripped of causes and plans and things to strive for, I discovered that everything I could need or ask for is right here in flawed abundance. Since then, my efforts have turned from trying to outrun suffering to trying to express it, from trying to achieve joy to trying to discover it, and from trying to shape or better the lives around me to accepting love wherever I can find it. For your meditation, sit quietly and simply let your heart breathe without focus. Try not to think, and also try not to not think. Exhale your pressures and arrive just where you are. Breathe deeply and accept the jewel and grit of this moment. December 22nd. The Lesson. God breaks the heart again and again and again until it stays open. Hazrat Inayat Khan. When young, it was my first fall from love. It broke me open the way lightning splits a tree. Then years later, cancer broke me further. This time it broke me wider, the way a flood carves the banks of a narrow stream. Then, having to leave a 20-year marriage, this broke me the way wind shatters glass. Then in Africa, it was the anonymous face of a schoolboy beginning his life. This broke me yet again, but this was like hot water melting soap. Each time I tried to close up what had been opened, it was a reflex, natural enough, but the lesson was, of course, the other way. The lesson was in never closing again. For your meditation, center yourself and concentrate on the part of your heart that is breaking open right now. Ease the pain by breathing deeply through the break. Try, if you can, just for a moment, to leave your heart open and look inside the break. December 23rd. A Surety of Roots. You didn't come into this house so I might tear off a piece of your life. Perhaps when you leave, you'll take something of mine. Chestnuts, roses, or a surety of roots. Pablo Neruda. Perhaps the most stubborn thing that keeps us from knowing love is distrust. Certainly we have more than enough reason in our world to be cautious, alert, even guarded against being hurt or taken advantage of. But the fact remains that in spite of all the news and terrible stories we pass on at parties, there is no other doorway into kindness and all its gifts but through the gentle risk to open ourselves, however slightly, and to just try. The question we must ask, that I ask myself every day, is which is more debilitating, to be cut off from love or to be scarred by the pain of being hurt? What makes Neruda such a great poet is the largeness of his heart. And through his large kindness, he suggests that giving heals, and until we step into that space between each other and try, nothing can happen. But once we do, giving and receiving become the same, and we all grow stronger for going there together. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind three small gifts you are willing to give away. They may be tangible or symbolic or gestures of kindness. Wrap each gently in your breathing. Bring these gifts with you into your day. Before you come home, give them away. December 24th. In a Burst of Oneness. When wax and wick work best, light and heat are all that's left. Like a candle, our wick of spirit is encased in our humanity, and when our spirit is touched, We light up until all we know melts and changes shape for the burn of our experience. Repeatedly our sweat and struggle burns our sense of self and world away so that our divine spark can be released again and again. These moments of spirit lighting up not only rearrange our lives, but they light and warm those who stay near. In such moments, we become one with what we see, and this sudden oneness is what the faithful of all paths have called love. And in the illumination of oneness called love, all that's left is a willingness toward birth, an urge to be touched by something timeless and fresh. All that's left is the want of deep parts in strangers, to relish the waking over being awake, the burning over being burned, the loving over being loved. When we can be, no matter how briefly, at one with what we have in common with all life, we are rewarded beyond attachment and ownership. This is the difference between becoming a singer and becoming the song. This is the best ambition, that the dancer melts into the dance, and the lover melts into the act of love, and the builder melts into the thing being built, until in a burst of oneness, dancer and lover and builder are one. Perhaps momentarily, when swimming with the stream, we are the stream. When moving with the music, we are the music. When rocking the wounded, we become the suffering. Perhaps momentarily, when thinking without masks, we become pure thought. When believing without doubt, we are God. Perhaps love is an instrument we play for all we're worth in an orchestra yet to be convened. Perhaps this is why in the fullest moments of loving or knowing or being, we go nameless and timeless and breathless. Everything about us, used up like a candle, burned over and over just to light entire rooms with our flicker. For your meditation, watch someone doing something they love. It could be as simple as gardening, cleaning a treasure, grooming a pet, stacking wood, or washing a child. Observe in detail how they attend what they love. What lets you know that they love what they are doing? Is there a moment where they seem to be one with what they love? What can their act of loving teach you? December 25th. Beginning again. The glory around you is born again each day. From the Muppets' version of A Christmas Carol. Creation is ongoing. The world begins anew each day. This is the miracle that makes not a sound, but which changes everything if we can be quiet enough to feel it happen. When we can participate in this, we begin anew each day. Consider how the sun washes the earth with its heat, and then clouds dissipate and grasses grow and stones crumble when no one is looking to reveal a smoother, deeper face. It is the same with us. In a moment of realness, the clouds in our mind clear and our passion is restored, and our walls crumble when no one is looking. It all continues and refreshes if we just let it. It all renews so subtly. We think it is night that covers the world, but everything living is recreated in that mysterious moment of rest that blankets us all. And each time you blink, if you pause to let your heart flutter with nothing but air, each time you open your eyes, you can begin again. It's true, this is the moment of resurrection, the opening of our eyes. For your meditation, sit quietly and look at the things about you, common as they may seem. Breathe deeply and close your eyes and pray to see everything again for the very first time. Breathe slowly and open your eyes and enter your life again as a pilgrim. December 26th. Inside the Wind. Sometimes I go about with pity for myself, and all the while great winds are carrying me across the sky. An Ojibwe saying. Our crucial task when in pain or despair is not to let the sour feelings spill into everything so that we stain our sense of the world. Yet we must also take care not to so contain our feelings that they fester and infect our sense of ourselves. Somewhere between these two extremes waits the life of healthy expression, not personalizing everything and not painting the world with our troubles. Our inner work is often most demanding when we are sad and afraid, for we can so easily be overwhelmed by the power of these emotions that we can start to believe the world less possible and ourselves diminished. Once feeling less than, we stop feeling the truth of what is genuine and start losing touch with the great winds of life. Yet somehow life has a way of carrying us along, whether we're aware of it or not. Just as the stream carries both the hungry fish and the sleeping one downstream, the great winds carry both the agitated heart and the peaceful one into tomorrow. So the work of prayer, when we feel least like praying, is neither to inflate or deflate the world or ourselves, but to restore our connection to the powerful currents of life. For your meditation, sit quietly, and after a time, open yourself without words to the mood of prayer. Breathe slowly and pray to feel the great wind surrounding you. Breathe steadily and feel your breath mix with the currents of life. December 27th. The Beauty of It. If all I have is now, where will I look for joy? Without hope for the future, without hope that things will change, with no hope of finding what's been lost and no hope of restoring the past, with only the risk to crack open all that has been hardened about me, what will I do with what I have? At first this might seem scary or sad, but as a tired swimmer comes ashore, surprised to find pearls washing through his legs, I lift my tired head again and again to find all I need is right where I am. But being human, I stray and dream of lives other than my own, and soon I'm busy wanting something else, somewhere else, someone else, busy imagining something just out of reach to strive for. It leads me to say, if you are unhappy or in pain, nothing will remove these surfaces. But acceptance and a strong heart will crack them like a shell, exposing a softness that's always been, exposing a soft thing waiting to take form. Look, it glows. I think it's the one spirit we all share. For your meditation, center yourself, and with your eyes closed, imagine what you want. Breathe slowly, and with your eyes open, realize what you have. Now reverse the process. Close your eyes and realize what you have. Breathe slowly, and with your eyes open, imagine what you want. Keep doing this until what you want and what you have start to become the same thing. December 28th. Integrity. Integrity is the ability to listen to a place inside oneself that doesn't change, even though the life that carries it may change. Rabbi Jonathan Omerman. Much of our journey so far has been about discovering that place inside and cultivating the ability to listen to it while having compassion for the life that carries it. It moves me to share the story of a troubled man who, exhausted from his suffering and confusion, asked a sage for help. The sage looked deeply into the troubled man and with compassion offered him a choice. He said, "You may have either a map or a boat." After looking at the many pilgrims about him, all of whom seemed equally troubled, the confused man said, "I'll take the boat." The sage kissed him on the forehead and said, "Go then, you are the boat, life is the sea." As we have discovered so many times, we have everything we need within us. This ability to listen inside is your oldest oar. You are the boat. For your meditation, sit quietly and put down all your maps for the moment. Let your breath take you safely out to sea. Breathe gently and bob there, and simply listen. December 29th. Sing then. As long as we sing, the pain of the world can't claim our lives. Through cancer, through growing up in America, through learning about the innumerable struggles for freedom around the world, all different but the same, through being with the people of South Africa, it has become very clear that giving voice to what is inner is essential to surviving what is outer. No matter where we live or whom we love, no matter what we want or what we can't have, this is the lesson I can't repeat or learn enough. When everything in life presses from outside of us, we have no choice but to sing like scared children, relying on their song to stop the pain, the way that fire stalls the cold. This is the secret of all spirit, why it can't stay inside but must be brought from within us into the world. For it's the song from within that keeps the pain of living from snuffing our lives. It's the song from within ignited again and again that keeps the world going. When we do this for ourselves, we do it for every child not yet born. As night and day take turns on this massive earth, spinning nowhere, the song we share within takes turns with the catastrophes of living. When we go silent, the age goes dark. Sing then in whatever tongue your pain has taught you. Sing though you have no training and never went to school. Sing because the cry from all the places you have kept quiet will stall the cold, will soften the danger, will keep the world possible for one more turn. For your meditation, deeply and simply close your eyes and let whatever is inside you begin to rise. Exhale everything that seems in the way, and give voice to the peace of the infinite that dwells within you. Release a cry or gasp or sigh, and feel the world continue. December 30th. We become the earth. In seeking what is essential, we become essential. I've always been amazed how the deepest things are intangible. Love, doubt, faith, confusion, peace, wisdom, even passion. Where are they? They can't be held in the hand like fruit or turned in the lap like pages of a sacred text. Yet they shape our lives. This has always been the driving mystery of all sacred wisdom. The only things worth saying are those things that are unsayable. It is quite humbling to realize we spend a lifetime gaining grain after grain of this wisdom, working to understand it and struggling to express it and share it, only to become more and more a part of it, unspeakable ourselves. Over time, we age into a stillness that breathes like stone, exposed beyond resistance. Perhaps this is the most poignant of paradoxes, nature's safeguard against letting too much of the mystery out. We take years of living to squeeze a few precious words from all that will not speak, and steadily, being shaped by our suffering and polished by our joy, we become the earth, knowing more and saying less. Ironically, after a lifetime, we may finally have important things to say, just as we lose our ability to say them. Yet this doesn't diminish all we try to say, for the fact that sound always ends in silence doesn't make music any less precious to our souls. It seems the more we live through, the less we can surface. I recall visiting Grandma Minnie when she was 94. I'd found the steamship ticket with which she came to this country in 1912 as a girl. There was a strange and beautiful name on it, Mayeska. This was her birth name, never spoken in this country. I put the yellowed ticket in her hand. Her eyes widened and I could feel the big old fish of her heart swim up near the surface, stirring waters that had been still for 80 years. Lifetimes passed between us in silence. She trembled and coughed with a chuckle, saying only, "I forgot I ever came." There is nothing sad about this. Rather, it feels inevitable and holy that we should become what we seek. We start out wanting to know love, and living long enough, we become love. We start out wanting to know God, and suffering long enough, we become God. Over time, the heart expands from within, and all our skins thin, till we become something elemental, rounding to the next grain of wisdom to be found. For your meditation, sit quietly with a trusted friend. Breathe deeply and meditate, each of you, on your own history of love, letting the wordless feelings stream through you. After a time, try to honor this wordless stream by letting a single word or phrase rise within you. Write down this word or phrase and hold it in silence near your heart. Without looking, trade pieces of paper and meditate in silence with your friend's written phrase near your heart. After a time, simply read each other's word or phrase aloud. December 31st. I see you. I see you. I am here. For centuries, African bushmen have greeted each other in this way. When the one becomes aware of his brother or sister coming out of the brush, he exclaims, "I see you," and then the one approaching rejoices, "I am here." This timeless bearing witness is both simple and profound, and it's telling that much of our modern therapeutic journey is suffered to this end, to have who we are and where we've been be seen. For with this simple and direct affirmation, it's possible to claim our own presence, to say, "I am here." Those people in our lives who have validated our personhood by seeing us and exclaiming so are the foundations of our self-worth. Think of who they are. For me, the first to rejoice at my scrambling into the open was my loving grandmother. If not for her unequivocal love, I might never have had the courage to express myself at all. And after all, isn't art in all its forms the beautiful trail of our all-too-human attempts to say, again and again, I am here? It's important to note that being seen enables us to claim our lives, and then it becomes possible to pass the gift to others. But just as important as bearing witness is the joy with which these bushmen proclaim what they see. It's the joy of first seeing and first knowing. This is a gift of love. In a culture that erases its humanity, that keeps the act of innocence and beginning invisible, we are sorely in need of being seen with joy, so we can proclaim with equal astonishment and innocence that of all the amazing things that could have been or not, we are here. As far back as we can remember, people of the oldest tribes, unencumbered by civilization, have been rejoicing in being on earth together. Not only can we do this for each other, it is essential. For as stars need open space to be seen, as waves need shore to crest, as dew needs grass to soak into, our vitality depends on how we exclaim and rejoice, I see you. I am here. For your meditation, sit with a trusted loved one, and with your eyes closed, meditate on their essence as you know them. When filled with their presence, open your eyes and declare with joy and sincerity, I see you. Allow your loved one the space to proclaim in return, I am here. Switch roles and repeat this process of first seeing and first knowing. If moved, live your life this way. As we come to the end of this journey, I want to thank you for your time and attention. It feels like we've taken a long walk together. And I want you to know what a joy this has been to give voice to this work, and more, to the life force every one of these entries points to. I wish you the best in your own awakening, and leave you with a small poem of mine called Free Fall. If you have 1 hour of air and many hours to go, you must breathe slowly. If you have 1 arm's length and many things to care for, you must give freely. If you have 1 chance to know God and many doubts, you must set your heart on fire. We are blessed. Each day is a chance. We have 2 arms. Fear wastes air.
The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have, was written and read by Mark Nepo, with a foreword by Wayne Muller. It was recorded by Ethan Donaldson, editing by Rob Weisberg, and post-production by Hudson Sound. The associate producer was Christina Zarafanidis. The Book of Awakening was produced and directed by Karen Perlman. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio, Finding Inner Courage, written and read by Mark Nepo.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.